Good morning and welcome to the Preventing Grace podcast for August 12th, 2019. It's a pity we're not numbering these podcasts.
I think there's like hundreds of them.
I know, but some people number them. They start in and say this is podcast number 30 or podcast number 1000. Yeah, well,
other people also have like
people
music.
Oh yeah,
like an intro. Yeah, every podcast I listen to has like a nice introductory song to plug in. But I don't even know how to put that in there.
Well, we would have
to. I don't know how to get a song stuck into my podcast. So,
and we
We could just find some free music somewhere, like some elevator
music. That would be a brilliant idea. Actually,
we can get the instrumental of the song that you wanted.
Without the words.
Yeah, because if there's a bad word in that song, that's what we can't put. We were gonna have a theme music that has Anne's name, with Anne's name on it.
Her name is Anne, and I'll be
something, but we can't say it something. Because
everybody knows what it is.
I know, but
you're such a prude.
This is a Christian podcast.
I mean, I guess technically it is. I don't like to make distinctions like that, though.
What?
A Christian.
Are we a Buddhist podcast?
No, but can't we just be a podcast? Do we have to have a religious theme? I mean, I guess we do. We talk about the church every week.
What else we talk about? What are we talking about?
I don't know. We should do lifestyle podcasting.
No, I don't want you lifestyle. That'd be really boring. Although today we do have 18 tips for making your marriage last 18 years.
Except we have a hard time.
We haven't thought of them yet.
Like, how are we going to count up to 18?
I'll keep counting my fingers and toes. Okay. But we don't know what they are yet because we haven't said.
we're gonna make them up as we go. Right. But we are gonna talk about anniversary, and we're probably gonna get to the astonishing reality that you've been kicked off Twitter.
I can't believe that someone kicked me off of social media. It's like I looked around the congregation yesterday when I mentioned that during the sermon that I had once been insulted by being called the son of a donkey, but the word wasn't donkey.
Nobody laughed.
They understood it.
Everybody was like, yeah. I know. You mean, did this only happen to you once? Or doesn't this happen to you every week?
Right. So, but anyway, this time it was unfair.
Life is so unfair.
It was unjust because all I did was point out that the man who's going around demanding that poor immigrant women working in spas touch his testicles because he's claiming to be a woman.
And he's
filing suit against them.
Yeah.
And I said, I put on his timeline.
I know, but why did
you
do that?
A man pretending to be a woman trying to force poor women to touch your genitals. So you're sick and perverse, and you need Jesus, so he can forgive your sins, so why don't you turn to him and be forgiven, or something like that. I preached the gospel to him, which is very...
I mean, I wouldn't say that you preached the gospel, maybe you tweeted the gospel.
I tweeted the gospel to him.
I feel like that's not quite the same thing. But, okay, it's interesting to me that you would wake up in the morning and think, you know what I'm going to do today? I'm going to tweet at a total stranger. Never occurs to me to do that.
It just enrages me that I would that this someone, it's come to the point in society where someone can do that and be thought of as progressive. This is like what you see in a man going around forcing poor women to touch him.
Yeah, it's like the French Revolution, or
right?
Something.
That's the patriarchy. I mean,
that's literally the patriarchy.
That is the patriarchy.
I mean, it's not literally the patriarchy in its more classical sense, but it's what everybody thinks the patriarchy is. But now they're fine with it. Like,
I mean, seriously, it had what's his name? Harvey Weinstein just said he was a woman.
Yeah, then it would have been fine. He should have identified it as a woman.
And then he could have said, I'm just a lesbian and these people are attacking me.
And you jerks, like, you need to do I mean, I'm not going to put you in my movie unless you...
It's another example of lesbian persecution in Hollywood.
Yeah, it's horrible. And the Epstein guy should have claimed to be transgender.
Right, exactly. It's a her.
Her. Miss Weinstein, or Miss Epstein.
if he just dressed trans and taught the women that he was enslaving how to twerk and read the library books.
It would have been great. It
would have been fine.
So, well, yes, it's the dawning of a new time for you not to be on Twitter.
I'm sad that I people say I should put another account up, but I...
You can't.
I can.
Oh, if you got a new computer?
Well, no, I can. It's...
Oh, you have to do your picture of incense.
I have to, but it's... Well, no, it's just a lot of work. I have to do the... I don't have to pinch the incense, but I'd have to take another picture. I have to follow all these people again. It's just... It'd be a pain. But... And I would only have one follower. I mean, I built up to 1,000 something, and just getting back up to
it takes would be... 10. It takes 15 years to get 1,000 followers. I've noticed that. No, I'm just saying for myself. Like now, I finally have like, I don't know, 1,500, 1,600 followers or something. But it took a decade of not tweeting to get myself there.
Yeah, well, so, you didn't pay attention to it for a while.
No, but even now, like I don't actually tweet. I don't enjoy it.
To get my active account back, I still have to, even though they've erased the tweet, they've deleted the tweet.
Yeah, they want you
but to. But I have to push remove on the button in order to get my account back. And I'm not going to do, I'm sorry, no.
No.
It's.
Yeah.
This is a male pedophile.
Predator.
Predator, right.
So, okay, well, let's talk about marriage. Okay, this is a desperately sad day for America because Liam Hemsworth. I'm sorry, I get them all confused. I don't even know who this person is. Liam Hemsworth and Miley Cyrus are getting divorced after less than a year of marriage.
They really stuck it out.
And
through thick and thin.
Through thick and thin. And I would like to read...
Sickness and in health.
...the tweets of Miley Cyrus. She's standing up in the clouds, making a face with the
mountain behind her. That's the dog scratching, not me. She's pointing it out.
Sure, that's what everybody was worried about. Okay, Miley Ray Cyrus says, "Don't fight evolution because you will never win. Like the mountain I am standing on top of," that's an elegant phrasing, "which was once underwater, connected with Africa."
Upon which I am standing.
Yeah. Like the mountain I am standing on top of, which was once underwater, connected with Africa, change is inevitable.
Yeah, that's not evolution.
The Dolomites were not created overnight. It was over millions of years that this magnificent beauty was formed.
That has nothing to do with evolution.
So then somebody says, "Happy to see the geology is gaining some traction amongst celebrities." Oh shoot.
Yeah, it's
okay, wait. The tweet, then she says, that's part one. Part two, "My dad always told me nature never hurries, but it is always on time. It fills my heart with peace and hope knowing that this is true. I was taught to respect the planet and its process, and I am committed to doing the same with my own."
So she's like the tectonic plate splitting when she divorces her husband after 1 year. That was pretty quick. The tectonic plate spent like, how long did it take for them to evolve apart? So, it's not evolution, but how long did it take for them to split apart? It took
I love the reasoning.
Millions of years. They had 1 year together.
We must split up because change is inevitable.
Right.
Okay.
Wow.
They are separating to, quote, "focus on themselves and their careers."
Yeah, see, it's like the climate change thing, right?
No. They're...
Oh, wait, say it again.
They're separating.
I'm thinking about the change of it being inevitable.
Oh, well, you're not changing quickly enough. They're splitting up in order to focus on themselves and their careers.
That's awesome. There hasn't been enough focus on Miley Cyrus, I'm telling you. I mean, we need more focus on Miley Cyrus.
Well, she probably hasn't focused on herself enough. She needs probably been given right. too much.
Of course.
She's given too much of herself away, and she needs how to, like,
How does a person like Miley Cyrus do it, really? Give so much of herself to...
gives and gives.
Right.
And nothing, like, she's just such a... Now she just
needs me time.
Yeah.
Look at her. She can tell that she has no thoughts for herself whatsoever. She's barely dressed.
Well, yeah, she is. And her hair hasn't been done. So...
She definitely needs some me time.
Somebody
she
needs dress. To buy her a donut and a dress and a hairbrush. Because she needs to eat a steak and brush her hair and put on something nice and some lipstick.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe he just refused to buy her any clothes.
I'm not sure what she's wearing there. It looks like a placard or something.
Okay, so if they had come to us for marriage counseling and fashion sense. Oh, my word.
What? You need to post that on there.
Okay, that's...
It's a placard. It's like a picture. It's like a painting that she's wearing in front of her.
If I were him, I would leave because that's a inevitable. Crime against humanity.
It would be inevitable.
And the mountains. It's a crime against the mountains and the valleys.
See, this is the debate that I was about to say. Is climate change, right? Like, so is it caused by human beings or is it natural?
It's caused by that dress.
In this
climate
case,
climate change is caused
was
by...
Was her divorce just a natural evolution or was it caused by human...
I'm going to go ahead and say it's probably caused by human, not by the mountains being tumbled into the sea, but by them not being tumbled into the sea. So, yeah, that dress is a crime. It's a...
Well, no one can see it, so we're just talking.
Okay, I'm going to put it up, though.
Yeah.
Okay, so if the Cyrus Hemsworths came to us ahead of their special day for some advice... What advice would you be giving them?
I think we should give them 18 points of advice.
Okay.
For staying married for 18 years.
Okay, one
if you want to stay,
year.
Yeah, if you want to stay married for 18 years, here's what you need to do.
Okay.
So what's the first one?
Well, I thought you were going to... I mean, I thought it was your job to take the lead. That's probably, like, an important one, is
well,
a man
is
supposed to, like... You know,
I am your spiritual guide.
Many people are like, I don't know if the man that I'm about to marry is going to be able to spiritually lead me.
Right.
And I always want to say, well, where were you hoping to go?
I always get the feeling that when a woman asks a question that she's going to tell him.
Yeah.
Where he's going to go.
Yeah. He just needs to sit quiet until she figures it out, and then he can say, let's go here. That's, yeah. Confirm that, Stenneth. That's how we recommend females submit to their husbands.
Let's see, the first...
Yeah, what's your first point of advice? Some of it should be real. Of our advice should be real, but I don't know what that would be.
Let's see. Like we said that at the wedding thing that we did this last weekend.
Mm-hmm.
What was the point of the sermon? It was you basically are going to die.
Yeah, that's the first point.
Be ready to die.
Every single minute of your life.
Right, because Jesus said, if you take up your cross and follow me, which is basically come and die, and marriage is like the gospel.
An endless death. Death by a thousand disappointments.
So I guess the first is don't go into a marriage because you fall in love and expect to be blissfully... walking on clouds for the rest of your days. If you think you're getting married because you fall in love, don't get married.
Well, what other reason would you get married? Just because you made
choice. People are married for like thousands and thousands of years without falling in love. But I'm saying, no, I think they should fall in love. That's fine. But I'm saying that shouldn't be the basis
of your actual marriage.
Because when
you should have something else to go with it.
Yes, like a commitment to die to yourself and bear witness to the gospel in your marriage.
Okay.
Like, that's the commitment, isn't that? Agape. That's what love is. It's you are dying to yourself for the good of the other.
Okay, but I do think that if you go ready to seriously die for the other person and, like, and expecting that it's going to be miserable, like, that you're going to begin dying right away and it's going to be awful, you're going to grit your teeth and bear all the death, and then you like probably shouldn't get married.
Like our wedding pictures?
Yeah, like our wedding pictures. You probably shouldn't get married either.
Well, no, I don't mean...
you shouldn't go in with the expectation that you're going to be miserable.
That was the first point. So, yes, I think we've had an exceptionally happy marriage. Right?
Yes.
Confirm that.
Yes, dear. I feel very happy today on this auspicious time.
Yeah, it's the day after our anniversary. So I think we had a good marriage, but the first thing is you do have to go in not expecting the Disney story.
I think
right?
you should, I would put it this way. Of course you're going to die, but you shouldn't expect to be happy. You shouldn't expect to be sad either, but you shouldn't really have expectations going in. You shouldn't go in thinking, this is going to be awesome, I'm going to be happy, everything's going to be wonderful. You shouldn't think about that at all. You should just get married, knowing that it's going to be hard. And then if it's not hard...
But this is the person you want it to be hard with.
Yeah. Matter what happens, life is going to be difficult and terrible to one degree or another. And you would like to endure all the difficulty and terribleness with this particular person.
Yes.
And, but you don't, so you don't expect misery on the one hand, and you don't expect amazing happiness on the other. You just don't stop and think about your expectations too much. Unless it's to say, oh no, I have really unreasonable expectations. And then say, oh, I need to stop expecting anything.
Well, most of our marriage counseling is, unreasonable expectations that people have, right? That oh wow, the wedding night is going to be awesome.
Or no, I thought he was going to know what I was thinking, or I thought he was going to do the dishes a lot. I thought he was going to be good with money. I thought he wasn't going to yell at me when I spent way too much at the grocery store.
Even though throughout our engagement we've argued about nothing but money,
was going to all be fine. I thought she was gonna be a great cook like my mom. I thought she was gonna work, and it turns out that she's not gonna work. She's gonna stay home with the
kids. So tip number one is, I think it still stands, be ready to die.
Yeah.
Be ready to die.
But don't, not in a horrible grit your
teeth.
Okay,
but we have 18 more tips, and so we can...
Okay. So tip number one, this only took 45 minutes.
That's what I'm saying.
Tip number two, be ready to live. Because you can't just die, you also have to live.
Okay.
Cue sappy music. I don't have anything to go with that one.
You don't have any,
tip number
in?
Three.
No, no. Okay, so how about this? Because you will become a different sort of person you think you are over the course of your marriage. So because the old you who used to have your own stuff and live in your own place with your own bank account and with your own your own life, it's everything changes and you do become a pretty new person. Change is inevitable.
Miley Cyrus says so. And if you can't trust Miley Cyrus, I don't know what you've got going for you. Yeah, so you're going to change, and you might as well go with it.
And it's not a bad change. It's actually really good, because you do learn... I've got to watch out. I'm not saying that people who are single or otherwise are selfish. but I'm saying that...
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, walk back
you
off
learn
that
not,
one.
You learn not to be about you all the time. You have to.
Well,
that's probably what's chafing my Cyrus. You can't... you can't be about you all the time.
There's different kinds of singleness, too. There's the kind of singleness where you're all about other people because you're devoting right. yourself to no, the gospel.
That's what I meant.
And then there's the kind of singleness where, does this. Yeah, I can't be bothered to worry about another person, and this is going to be, you know.
I can get married only if that person will conform to my career, my lifestyle, my yeah. ways of doing things. And then, so they're, you know, the woman at 35 who's looking for the man in her career path, doing her thing. I mean,
and he's in his, and then they aren't going to stay together because they can't.
Right, because they both came in as free agents, and they're going to leave as free agents.
Yeah. Okay, but I said be ready to live, not ready to change.
Okay, you well, no, but mine? It's like no, it's like a caterpillar into a butterfly. Oh,
you turn into a butterfly.
Right, so you live.
Yeah, yeah, you live. So, you become more fully who you are. You flourish.
So marriage is like self care.
Thrive. Hashtag thrive.
Right. So tip number three, I would say, is don't go into marriage thinking that. Or this person going to meet all my needs and make me happy.
It's like number one,
but it's a little bit different because that's what the person in love thinks. When you are in love, we are deeply in love. But you think when the passion is at full tilt that the other person is going to be the end all and be all, and you'll never be sad again because you have this person with you.
Yeah.
And
it's like the duck and the duck and the bunny, and no one was ever alone again. That was my.
That's horrific. It's horrific.
Yeah, it is kind of horrific. You look at the duck and the bunny, and you're like, I'm never gonna survive. Yeah.
So if you look, I think this is the primary reason for divorce is that people go into marriage thinking this person makes me feel good, and this person is always gonna make me feel good, and then. Somewhere down the line, this person doesn't make me feel good anymore, and so I've got to get out. Something's wrong. Something's terribly wrong, and so I've got to find somebody who makes me have that loving feeling again.
Okay.
And nothing's wrong. You're just human. If you've lost the passion after 5 years, that's humanity rearing its ugly head, and that's why you don't get married just because you fall in love with somebody.
You have to have other. Yeah. You have to have economic reasons for marriage.
I'm
just kidding.
you have to get married. Don't get married if you fall in love. Get married if he has a steady income.
Yes.
Of lots of money.
Yes. If you can both further each other's financial goals, that's tip number four.
Well, no.
Okay, no. Is it my turn then?
Yeah, go ahead.
So how many have we done?
That was three.
Okay, so this is number four.
Yeah.
Tip number four. Be willing to say appalling things that should never be spoken out loud. Like, I would really like you to do the dishes.
What do you mean, like, so that he doesn't have to guess?
Say things that you should not have to speak. In a perfect and good world, you would never have to speak. Some things, like, I need you, if you don't buy me flowers, I'm going out and buying myself flowers. Or yeah, if you don't do the dishes, I'm gonna literally start screaming. If you don't pick up your socks off the floor, like I'm gonna go mad, and you'll have to institutionalize me.
That's right.
Because I wouldn't. You're gonna have to things... say them out loud, and that's gonna be the primary kind of death that you endure. Saying things that shouldn't have to be said is a terrible spiritual death.
I would say that number four is mostly for women. Because I tell you what I want.
No, but sometimes you don't. You don't always. And you'll like go along in your own head for days and days and days without actually speaking. And then when I protest, you say, oh, well, I was just, you know, I'm stressed about work. It never dawned on you to say, I'm stressed out. Like, but you have to say things too. They're different things. And somehow you think...
Well, I do think it's helpful when you tell me that you're about to come undone because I haven't bought you flowers. And I don't... Because I don't know. I don't know what the heck is going on in your head half the time. There was 18 years of marriage, I still... You do things and say things that I just... They're completely weird and strange. I don't understand. Like, most of our fights are like
you have plenty of opportunity to learn if you were curious enough.
No, it's your fault.
But you're not curious
enough. Most of our fights are me saying, "What? What did I do? What's wrong? Why am I in trouble? What did I do wrong?"
You're never in trouble.
I am in trouble.
That's number five. The other person is never in trouble. Okay, I'm saving that for number six. Okay, number five. You have to say things out loud. It's your turn. Number six.
Number five. I get number five.
Sorry, you're number five.
Don't put too much expectations on your wedding night.
Okay. Are you about to say something untoward here?
No, I thought we had a great wedding. I'm just saying.
I don't want you to say anything about it one way or another.
I'm just saying.
That's one of the things I don't want you to speak about, ever.
I'm just saying, especially people who have been, who've done the right thing and not had any sexual experience before marriage, which is what you should do, when they often put like so much weight and baggage on the honeymoon time.
So what you need to read is a Lutheran satire, Lutheran couple from Holy Christ Almighty Lutheran Church. Shocked. Horribly awkward for a sexual experience.
Right. Yeah, it's going to be awkward.
It should be probably, like that. Read that, and that'll be how it is.
And strange, and uncomfortable, and it might hurt a bit.
Embarrassing.
Just lay back and think of England, is it?
Yeah.
So, we this is part of our marriage counseling. We spend some time telling the couples not to freak out if it doesn't seem to work right at first. And that's one good thing about being married for a long time is you have a chance to figure things out
and repair
the damage you did on the wedding night.
Okay, is it my turn?
Yes.
Number five, six.
I did five. You're doing six.
Okay.
And we're now one third of the way through.
Oh gosh, I can't remember what I had. I had one, and then you.
You try to step in front of me and take my turn, so I'm
getting my own. I've forgotten what it was then that I was going to say. Talk about money.
Okay.
Talk about your finances.
I don't think it'd be
Without emotion and without rancor. Don't make your financial issues a moral question where you judge the other person in moral terms for their financial proclivities.
How they have lived before.
And how they like to spend money now. Don't make that a moral judgment. Take the moral sense out of the equation when you're talking about it and do it in very even, unemotional tones when you're talking about it without making horrible inferences about the character of the other person.
That goes for like not just money, but a lot of things. The level of cleanliness in the house that you're comfortable with.
Don't make moral judgments about the other person to them in your arguments.
Right, because you come from one family background, your spouse comes from another, and it's neither one are probably morally bad. Unless spouse comes from a mafia background, then yeah, this is the way they spend.
But even then,
their thoughts about money might be.
Even then, though, you could delay the moral judgment until you have
gained. You know whether or not the money that you have in your bank account comes from
the mob,
right?
Like, yeah. Same with parenting. Like, don't talk about parenting in moral terms. Right away. You can maybe eventually if you think the other person.
The Bible certainly says things about parenting.
Mm.
Like be sure to beat the child.
But if you're unhappy about the way that your spouse wants to parent, you don't have to make a moral determination when you're talking about it because that will just shut the other person down and destroy
the conversation.
But you could
say if your wife says, "Well, I don't believe in spanking." You could say, "Well, God does."
Okay, yeah. And that'll make
Can I show you in the Bible where God says...
Yeah, and then she will be like, "Yeah, okay, I'm convinced."
Well, if she's not convinced by the Bible, then she's a heretic and you shouldn't marry her. That's not my number seven.
Okay, that's your number seven? Okay. If she's not convinced by the Bible, don't marry her.
Right.
Okay, well, that's going to cut out a lot of even Christian marriages. So I think that's bad for humanity, and I think you should take that one off the table. That's yours?
No, well,
Your next one?
My next one wasn't that, but I think I'm going to go with something like that.
Okay.
Because, yes, no, if you're going to marry somebody and you notice that their faith is kind of what's happening now, not really all that interested in church, but going, not all that interested in Jesus, but saying they believe, that's not a good sign. That's a bad thing. That person may be just going to church and saying the words and spouting off the thing because they know you're a Christian and they want to have you. So be careful, because that leads to lots of sorrow
when it turns down out the road, that they were right?
Because you're a very different person as a Christian than the non-Christian person is. Your motivations, your priorities, your thoughts about how to spend money, you try giving money to your church to somebody who's not really a Christian and see what happens. It's
really painful.
Try getting kids up to go Sunday morning with a guy who's would rather stay in bed until noon, and it's tough. I mean, don't use the faith like a he says he's a Christian, check.
Yeah. So can I do my next one?
Right.
What number are we on?
That was number 7.
Okay. So introduce your prospective love spouse to someone who has actually good discernment and who can tell whether people are Christian or not. Because not everybody is able to tell. So, I mean, in general, you should always take somebody's word for it when they say they're a Christian and treat them as if they're a Christian, right?
You're making a huge decision.
But when you're going to get married and you have maybe guessed wrong about people's faith in the past, which, of course, all of us do to one degree or another, introduce your person to people who have, in general, guessed right about or been able to tell if somebody was really a Christian or not. And I will just go on record and say that I'm one of those people who can generally tell. And so if you are unsure about whether the person you're in love with is really Christian, you could invite me to your house and feed me dinner, and I will, at the end of the conversation, tell you whether or not you're doing a good thing or not. I say that without guile. I'm actually pretty good at...
You are good at that, but I'm not sure that that scenario would work out.
I could have a consulting business where I go travel around the country visiting Christians, people before they get married, to tell them whether or not they're saved. And then that could be part of your wedding package. Why are you looking away in sorrow and horror?
Okay, he's right. No, you're right. You're absolutely right.
I mean, I'm not going to tell you this if you don't ask. Like, if you don't come and say, am I really marrying a Christian? I'm not going to tell you because it's none of my business. But if you wanted to know and you weren't sure, I could totally help you out with that. Probably the same goes for, like, is your pastor a Christian? Send me some sermons and I'll let you know. If you're not sure if your pastor is a Christian,
yeah,
I can probably help you out with that. I feel like I have pretty good discernment. I don't feel like I have pretty good discernment. I do, because I've exercised my discernment muscle a lot. And it would be really painful to then say to somebody, I just don't think we should get married right now. I don't feel like you're a strong enough Christian. You could say that instead of saying, I don't think you're a Christian. I don't feel like you're strong enough in your faith right now. You could say that. That would be really painful, but less painful than in 20 years in just awful psychic pain, because you're in constant and total conflict all the time about Christianity and the gospel and your children and Jesus, which is very, very painful and difficult for people. Basically, what ends up happening is you have to take Christianity off the table if you want to stay married in the long run and say, I'm just not going to be the person who ever talks to you about this. And I'm just going to pray for you in silence. And I'm going to know that I didn't bring up my kids the way that I thought I was going to. Yeah. And then you can probably stay married. But it's painful.
Yeah.
A lot of Christians are duped on this one.
Mm-hmm.
Because people are not... There's so much cultural Christianity.
Well, love clouds your discernment, too.
But also a lot of people claim to be Christian in right. this day and age who have no idea what that means.
Right.
And so if you, like, look at the Lifeway statistics. It's possible, statistically, that you're going to land on somebody who thinks that if you're a good person, you go to heaven.
Right.
Right? So you need to investigate that a little bit more.
Yes.
Okay. Was that eight?
Yes.
We're just powering through these.
Nine is fight the fight all the way to the end of the fight. So when you argue about something, or when you have a really intense disagreement about something, don't just agree to stop fighting.
Yeah.
Because what happens is you build resentment up in your heart. And over the course of time, that resentment grows, and it takes various forms. So if you originally are fighting about, say, you know, the first marriage fight you have is, should be, I don't know, buy this car or not. And you pile all kinds of moral judgments into the argument
yeah.
against each other. You finally settle on the car, but you don't really
yet
hash out the issue. Then what happens is the person who lost the fight
will save it up.
And every other fight you have in your marriage, if you don't fight that fight out to the end, every other fight you have in your marriage is really going to be about that car.
The recapitulation
and,
of that.
Right. So you throw your socks in the floor. She's angry with you and she is outraged 18 years down the line. It's really because you didn't finish
the car debate.
The car fight, right. So what I mean by fighting it to the end is both people have to be okay. Both people have to say...
Even if you compromised.
You've been able to say...
I'm actually okay with this decision.
Right.
And I don't hate you.
And it's not a sign of being Christian or peace-loving or whatever to swallow real anger at another person and not say anything, especially if it's your spouse. You have to get it out.
Okay, and this is really important for women, too, because I think women think that... they are supposed to be peace-loving, and they're supposed to be the peacemaker.
And submissive.
And submissive to the decisions of the husband.
Which is true, but that's not what submission means.
But that's not what that means. Right. It doesn't mean that you're...
You say nothing, you do nothing, you don't get angry ever.
Or you swallow down argument after argument without, like, really getting all the way to the bottom of whatever an issue is.
So, yeah, because in one of the weird ways that submission has been interpreted in our day is quietude.
Yeah.
And that means you are the little woman who sits home ready with with the slippers for the husband when he comes. I mean, I don't think you've ever done that for me, actually. You've never, but what I love about you is if you think I'm wrong about something, or you're hurt, you make no bones about telling me. I know. If I've done something wrong, I know. You make it known to me both in word and in action. And you're not afraid. You're not afraid to tell me that I'm being stupid. And that's incredibly helpful. If I was married to a woman who thought submission meant shutting up and letting me have my own way, I'd probably be dead by now because I've made so many stupid decisions. Either dead or impoverished
jail.
Or in jail, right? Because, yeah.
I think this is where progressives get a lot of mileage, and they talk about how, I think in some ways it's justified, the whole submission, the way that submission and role issues are talked about in Christian circles into kind of a farcical thing, because I think it often actually is lived out in what might be said such a caricaturized and almost in a ridiculous sense that it's inhuman. You're basically asking one party to completely sublimate who they are,
right?
And you're calling it Christian marriage, and that's not
submission.
Christian
does not
marriage.
Mean you're a robot who does what your husband says all the time. And
yeah, so, and that you don't speak in your marriage, yeah. Or that you don't.
And that's important for the man too, because I remember we counseled a couple who he felt a lot of pressure to always make the right decisions without talking to his wife.
Yeah, he had to lead her.
Because he had to lead her, right?
Yeah. And that was where I was like, where exactly were you hoping to go, sir, ma'am?
So it was never, like, he had to have the right decision at the right time, and she thought her role was to just wait until he came up with the right idea.
Yeah, I mean, they both thought this, and they were both trying really hard, and it was so off. I mean, it was weird. It was inhuman. You can't ask one of the members of the marriage to stop being a human being, which is what a lot of the submission talk is asking. Because human beings have bodies, minds, souls, mouths. They can do work.
Right.
They're participants in human society. So you don't put one of them, and you don't put baby in a corner and then think that baby's going to be happy there and it's all going to be okay.
Nobody puts baby in a corner.
Nobody puts baby. Eventually, baby's going to come out of the corner swinging. And somebody's going to get hurt. So don't do that.
So it's your turn.
Oh, okay.
That's number 10. Yours number 10.
My number 10?
Yeah.
Let's see. I would say if you... Maybe this sounds controversial, but I don't think that it is. Most women today grew up in essentially a kind of a very equal rights kind of situation. Most women went to college. Most men went to college. So you probably have a relationship or a marriage where both of you are working, and maybe you decide that one of you is going to stay home, but even if you do that, you're going to end up with a side gig because you're going to need the money. Like, we're not in the kind of economy where one income can go. And that doesn't have to be a moral question either. You don't have to make that into a moral question and feel bad if you have to have money to survive. That being so, figure out how to make your lives work using biblical principles, but without becoming inhuman and weird. So, you know, if this is one thing I really enjoy about our marriage is that we share almost everything. We share the house and the church and the children and the grocery. We share the details of our lives. We've kind of worked out a nice, balanced, equitable situation in terms of time and labor. So we have different spheres in our lives, but they're very
overlapping.
They're very overlapping. So I know not everybody can have this, but you don't go away for 10 hours of the day and then come home exhausted. And then like, I have to keep the children quiet while you unwind. And if that's your situation, then you have to make the best of it. But you work from home. I have a lot of stuff going on. You shop one day, grocery shop one day, I grocery shop another day. You cook certain days of the week, I cook other days of the week. You go to church certain times for certain things, I go to church other times for other things. We take the children different directions, and we've negotiated that without violating Christian principles. Like,
yeah,
it's okay. You don't have to be like, I must. And if you're a college educated woman, you don't have to be like the transformed wife and be like, I shouldn't have gone to college. I've ruined everything. I don't know how to take care of my babies. Well, figure out how to take care of your babies. Like, it's fine. Don't freak out. If you got a college education, that's great. Unless it was in women's studies, in which case, I'm sorry, you wasted your money. But if you're a geologist like Miley Cyrus, you can use your mind. And that's, you should be happy about that. That's my number 10.
Yeah.
That was too long.
That was
sorry,
good.
But I think people are like trying to go back to the 50s and the 60s and the 1800s.
And that's the model instead of...
And you should take where you are, account for reality, and then move forward without, you know, like a lot of despair.
Right.
Okay, it's your turn.
I guess it's related to my last one, which is, you know, fight everything to the end. But this one is that if you're the husband in the marriage, as if you're male. I would say if you find that you're making decisions over your wife's objections often, then you're wrong. Then you've failed utterly in your position. You need to. The struggle should be consensus. That everything you're doing, you should fight to make sure that you are not taking her in a place that she doesn't want to go, and not. So if you really really want to move, and she really really doesn't, then that says wait.
Yeah.
And
we shouldn't move right now.
We shouldn't move right now. Let's talk, and
just keep talking.
Keep talking
for the next 20
years. You may talk for the yeah right, but just don't. Yes, you're the head of the family, but don't take that as.
I mean, unless you're going to starve to death.
Yeah, there are times, of course, when.
Like.
When you have to say, okay, we've got to do this.
But those should be like because you're all going to die.
Right. Right.
Not because you don't like your job or.
Part of your decision-making process is how are you going to die best.
Yeah.
Because what your job is as a husband is not to figure out how can I make my life better, but how can I make my wife's life better? How can I make my children's life better? And if that means you stay in a job that is really horrible and you hate, in a place
fine.
That your kids and wife love, that's what you do.
Yeah.
That's who you. That's that. Welcome to
the cross.
Being Jesus, right?
Yeah.
Right. And
there. Yeah. And you're. Yeah.
Because we have seen evidence, we have seen some cases where the husband just does his own thing, and he thinks
he's serving his family,
but really
he's just making them all miserable because he's happy and they're all like
yeah.
in grief.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I would say that's what number are we on? Is this 12?
Yeah.
I would agree with that. Like, but it should go both ways. Mm-hmm, if you mm-hmm. both are really you should both be eager to give over the one. It should be that horrible, horrible story that I hate with the gift of the Magi where they both sell off their thing that they like and then they're both unhappy. They're poor and unhappy. So, but except the problem with that story is that you can take turn, you know, you can both sublimate yourself at different times mm-hmm. for the sake of the other person. And it's okay to talk about that openly and negotiate it. Like, I'm going to go ahead and not live my best life right now because I know you have,
right.
You know, you really, you will be so happy if you get to do this thing
mm-hmm.
and, vice versa. You shouldn't make a hard and fast law.
Right.
You should, where there is no law, like the Bible doesn't tell you what to do. You should talk and talk and talk and talk about those things so mm-hmm. that you're both going in the same direction together instead of one person dragging the other person along behind. Because I know, like, women do this to men, too. That's my number 12.
Okay, so the next, my advice, number 13, is never love your children more than your spouse.
Mm, that's a good one.
That's another huge problem. I mean, and you know, it actually happens more with people in their second marriage because who have kids. They've formed this really close attachment with the children. They get married, and
yeah,
then the kids rule everything, right?
Yeah.
But it can also happen in the first marriage, and I'm not to be the patriarchy, but it tends to be women who do this more. They so dote on, love, embrace. I mean, just their children are the everything for them.
And they privilege the needs of their children over the needs
right.
of their spouse.
And they get mad when their spouse doesn't do the same.
Yeah,
and they're upset that their husband isn't directing everything in his life for not the care but the happiness, the felt happiness, the felt needs of his children, not the real needs, the felt needs.
Yeah,
and so she gets angry with him when he wants to be with her. and
without his children.
Or he wants to have a rule that he lays down that the kids can't subvert by begging to the mother to allow them to subvert them. And then she does, because she loves her children. And he has no authority over them because of that.
And usually when that happens, a heavy dose of shame comes in, because the way that the woman will control the man in regards to the children is by shame.
Right.
She'll shame him in front of the children or in regards to the children. And so he over time will feel more and more and more helpless. And that breeds resentment, and then ultimately
you're waiting for adultery is what you're doing.
Yeah,
you're setting yourself up to be left, because he wants a wife,
and yeah,
and he wants someone who loves him, and he wants someone
who chooses him. That's not to excuse it,
but that's not to excuse it when it happens. But that's what you're doing.
Shame is such. Yeah, okay, I'm going to save that one.
So right off the bat, your husband or your wife's needs and wants and desires come first before your children. And as long as he's not or she's not an abusive person, you guys are one unit when it comes against the children. The children are your enemies.
They're anyway, not that's why you have to love them. That's why Jesus right. commands you to love your enemies.
Right.
It's so that you'll be nice to your children.
Right. You need to carve out a life just between the two of you first, and that should be the most cherished life that you have. And then, yes, have a good family life, but there should always be a sense that, gosh, I really wish the kids would go away so we could be alone.
Yeah.
And I wish I'm looking forward to the kids going to college, so that while we'll miss them desperately, you and I can have the rest of our lives together by ourselves. That should be the hope that both of you have in some ways. And I know a lot of parents are thinking, oh my gosh, what's going to happen when the kids go away? Because it'll just be me and you.
I know,
What are we going to do?
What are we going to do? We have nothing in common.
Right.
Okay, so my next one is the whole question of shame. And this goes back to the moral. Is this 14?
Yeah.
This goes back to the moral. Don't bring morality into it as much as possible. Don't judge your spouse in moral terms. Don't use shame as a way to control the other person's behavior. Give honor quickly to whoever. This goes for children too. To whoever honor is due. If you can treat your children with sort of a deference and respect, and your husband that way, and your wife that way, rather than with blame and shame, you'll probably get the results you want. You'll in a quicker and less painful fashion. It's not that you can't and shouldn't sort of try to make everybody go in the same direction, especially if you are a mother and you've got a lot of people going on, you know, in different directions, and you need, say, people to do their schoolwork and keep the house clean and get in the car and do this and that. You don't need to use shame as the way right. that you accomplish those things. So it's okay to acknowledge that part of your job is to make people do things. Like, that's not necessarily manipulative. It's just reality. But if you are having to, like, guilt people or, I don't know. I need to think more about the question of shame, because I think it's a huge way that people manage to.
Well, a lot of times, this is when you marital counseling, not premarital, but marital counseling. There's a lot.
Shame is the issues method there, of that.
There, whatever the issue is. Part of the reason that makes it such a burning issue is that one or both are
humiliated,
smothering, layering over it this idea that, well, this just shows that you're a horrible person.
Yeah.
We're disagreeing about money, but really what the problem is you are a selfish, horrible man or you're a horrible woman, and that's why we're having this disagreement.
Yeah.
When it's just may not have any moral component to it at all.
Yeah. And so in the question of with children too, I think that shame often comes into the equation, because the quickest and easiest way to get your husband to do something with regards to the children, or to get your children to do something, is to shame them. It's just it's more efficient. It's a more efficient way of mm-hmm. accomplishing your purposes mm-hmm. and layering in moral issues where no moral issues need to exist. And so you should it's harder and less efficient and more complicated to respect people, especially your teenage children, I think, and treat them as if they were adults in just your manner of speaking to them. But it's better in the long run, because then they won't hate you and try to get away from right. you.
15. Your spouse has total authority over your relations with people of the opposite sex.
Oh gosh, it's controversial.
Right. Well, what I mean is, often people don't understand when they're having attraction
yeah.
to someone of the opposite sex. They think, oh no, we're just really good friends. But the spouse can usually see more than yeah. you can. And so now I understand there are people who are just and unreasonably jealous, and so we're setting
those
people off the yeah. off the map. So if that's you,
that's a whole thing. That's a different, so yeah. you should get some counseling.
If you have someone who's unreasonably jealous, then
you can't go to a store or
take lessons or something like that.
Yeah,
but
go to your job because
I will say physical or personal trainers.
Okay, well that could be a question.
but in general, in a healthy marriage. Because you're going to be married for a long time and you're human, you might find yourself drawn to someone you work with or someone at church or someone, and your spouse might notice that. And if your spouse is really jealous about that, then she or he goes first. So you say, okay, well, I don't think I'm attracted to this person, but if you think I'm getting too close, well, then I'll draw back. That's love. That's what you do. Because chances are, even if that person is not someone you're really attracted to, that's going to breed so much difficulty in your marriage.
Yeah.
that it's not worth it.
And anxiety
because you want to love your spouse enough to say, okay, well, if this is really causing you anxiety, I'm gonna back up.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So my next one, I only have two more, right?
That was, so I just choose. Did 15, so you did, okay. you do 16, okay. I do 17, and then you 18.
Okay, so I read an article a long time ago that I thought was really, really helpful, and I'm not going to be able to find it, so I'm just going to quickly describe it. And that's that you, whenever you are talking to your spouse, like you go to your spouse, what marriage is a series of bids, this person said. Mm. You, anytime you go, you have any interaction with your spouse that you initiate, you're really making a bid for their affection. You're saying, you're asking them over and over and over again, do you love me and are you choosing to be with me? And if so, in light of that, almost all of your answers to the other person should be yes. Like the predominant number of answers that you give to your spouse should be yes. The no should be very carefully considered and more rare. So you could allot that by day, like I need my yeses today to be like 70 or 90% and my no's to be 10 or whatever. And then of course over a lifetime you could do, I'm not good at math, so I'm not going to even say the word statistics. So this goes for every interaction that you have. If your spouse comes to you and says, do you have time? Could we sit and have a cup of coffee this evening together? You need to say yes. Do you want to go to the grocery store with me? You need to say
yes,
even if you don't want to go. And then this helps, of course.
Or if there's a reason why you can't.
Well, I'm getting to that. Your first word always needs to be yes. This will, of course, help so much in the area of sex, because because this is true for housework, going out, conversations, things that you do together, but of course it's also true for sex, because the vast number of times that the other person makes a bid...
Mostly it's the man making the bid.
Mostly the man, the answer needs to be yes. And then only very rarely, no, because all those add up. And if most of the other person's bids are said no to, you're saying no to that person over and over and over again, not just what they're asking you. Yeah. You're saying, no, I don't choose you. I choose all these other things. So if you have to say no, which of course you have to do, like, I know when I ask you if you want to go to the grocery store with me, that not only do you not want to go, you don't really have time. I'm like, it's not really a good, you have other more important things to do that I actually do would rather that you do. So you can say, I wish I could go to the store. Can we instead have coffee together tonight? That's not a no. That's a,
I really want to spend time with you.
I do choose you. Right. I'm choosing to be with you. And then if you've worked up in your mind that like going to the grocery store is symbolic of everything, then you who are making the bid need to say, actually, if you say no to going to the grocery store with me, I'm going to melt down. Like, yeah. You've said no to me 4 times today already, and I can't deal. I feel like you're not choosing to be with me. So you both then acknowledge the thing that we're talking about is not the grocery store, but do we choose to be together? Do we love each other? Do we want each other rather than all the other things?
That's important. I mean, I know you brought up sex, but that's important because I think sometimes women go into marriage thinking that the male sex drive is just a physical thing, and it's only because he's just an animal and he's not able to control his urges. Yeah. When, no, it's not that. Men and sex is a very emotional thing. It's do you admire me? Do you
choose to be with me?
Do you want to be with me? Yeah.
Yeah.
And so saying no isn't just saying you can just control your sexual urges. It's, I'm not attracted to. Yeah. And I mean,
and that's painful. If you add those up over time, that's going to be like a raw pain.
Right.
And you're going to stop. The man will just retreat and be like, nope, I'm not going to, I can't keep asking because it's too painful for me.
I keep being rejected.
Yeah. But that goes for the woman. If the woman's like, I will you talk to me this evening?
Yeah.
And the man's like, no, I gotta watch my game.
Watching.
Then that man is saying to them like, I don't want to be with you, and this game is more important to me than you. And again, it's fine, but look at the whole course of your day. If all of your bids have been a no, then that final one is gonna break the camel's back, and you're gonna have a hysterical woman on your hand who's like, I never want to be with me and everything. Yeah.
So that goes to my next one, which is 17, which is schedule. Marriage is liturgy. Mm. And when you worship, there are certain times you do certain, at least in Anglican circles, there are certain times you say certain things and do certain things, and they follow an order, and that actually brings a lot of life into the worship. Even though I know the assumption is, well, it's so rigid. And
it's a dead letter.
Yeah, it's a dead letter. And no, actually, it actually provides the space and the definition for true worship, I think, to take place. So the same thing is true in marriage, that this is why we tell our couples to schedule times every week where you sit down at least one time. We used to call it date night, but people have all sorts of weird ideas about that. So whatever it is.
We still call it that.
But
if you can't, weird reasons, call it that, then call it another thing.
What we mean is, every week there needs to be a set time when you sit down with your spouse over with a glass of wine, food, or whatever, and you let her talk.
That's sexist.
And you listen. And you do the practice of active listening
where you repeat back
to her what she said, or you show that you're taking in what she's talking about, because she needs that outlet of talk to be okay, and you're the only outlet she has. And if you're not being that outlet, then she's going to find that stifling to her soul.
She's going to feel alienated over time. Okay, and one
and the
reason...
same thing, go ahead.
Well, go. You finish and then I'll...
I said, and actually the same thing is true with sex. Is you schedule a time during the week that's going to happen. And that has... Don't break that. Once or twice a week, depending on how old you are and what your state of man is. But it has to be there, and it has to be at a set time so that the man doesn't panic, and his soul isn't stifled, right?
The reason to do that is because it does, in some important way, take some of those bids off the table.
Right.
So that
he doesn't have to always ask, please, 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 please.
Yeah, she doesn't have to say, please, right. I just want you to talk to me.
Right.
We never get to talk. And she's not having to bid for his affection, and he's not having to bid for hers either. And because you do have so many bids over the course of a day or a week, taking some of those off and taking the emotional weight off of those and just putting them on the table, saying they're sacrosanct, means that you have some emotional breathing room, and you don't have you've already taken the no away, so the other person can relax and enjoy being there.
Right. Yes, that actually gives you some space if you can't go to the store with your wife.
Yeah.
To say, look, honey, I really want to go. I can't.
I have to actually do my job that I'm paid to do.
But she knows.
And she's like, you don't let me.
But she knows that, you know, Friday or whatever day, you're going to actually keep your commitment and sit down and talk. Then she's not.
Then she can go to the store alone without coming unglued.
Right.
Okay, so most people would rather go to the store alone. That's a bad example. Like, I don't actually want to go to the store.
You don't like it when I go to the store with you.
I know. I've said that was, you get that was angry a really, really, really bad example. But I can't remember what. Okay, so is it my last one?
Yeah, I think it's 18.
Okay, so my last one is Read Green Dolphin Street. You laugh. But if you want a picture of how painful marriage is when it's done wrong and you marry the wrong person and everybody makes, in human sense, every single decision that you would never, ever, ever want to make. And you, unlike Mary Miley Cyrus, you keep your commitment and you get stuck in a situation that you just long desperately to get out of. What would happen to you? So this book just shows what that is. And it shows how marriage is created by God for the saving of both members of the marriage. Marriage is about Christ and the church, but it's about the saving, the eternal souls of the two people involved. God uses marriage to effect an eternal salvation, an eternal holiness in the other person, mm-hmm. if they don't let go of each other. It's a painful salvation, more painful for some than for others. But if you accept it and you accept that it's God's providence for you, then you can be saved. And I think that it's really, I don't think we talk about this enough as a culture, because we've had to be so much anxious about people who are single, because single people have been, you know, left out of a lot of the life of the church, and so we've kind of swung towards you know, not talking so much about marriage, and I'm fine with that. But there is a part of marriage that's about the salvation and the holiness of the other person that isn't really available to you,
right,
if you don't get married, and that's fine. God will make you holy in some other way.
He'll use the church.
He'll use the church to do that, and that's great. But if you are in the estate of marriage, you shouldn't get out of it, because God is using it to make you acceptable for a heavenly life. So you shouldn't throw it away, even if it's painful.
That's great advice. We should, you know what? We should charge money.
I think so.
And have people come to us for cash. we will help. We will fix your marriage.
We will fix your marriage for cash.
$10,000.
And when we do that, when we get our first $10,000 contract, I'm going to go out and buy. I'm not going to go buy a Speedy bag. That's so stupid. Of all the bags that Rachel Hollis could buy when she gets a $10,000 contract, she picks a Louis Vuitton Speedy bag, which is like a weird, it's not even the best bag.
I don't think if I live to be 100 years old, I'll ever understand a woman's
thing
with her bag.
Bonus tip number 19. One to grow on. Support your wife in her desperate search for the perfect bag.
It just makes no sense to me.
I mean, don't belittle her. Why don't you just get it? Shame her while she's looking for her bag.
You know, you can go
when she finds it, rejoice with her as a because a lost lamb has been brought home to sit in her closet in a place of honor.
You can go to any grocery store and get a plastic bag.
Oh my gosh.
That will hold your purse.
No.
Or hold your wallet or whatever it is, and hold your, you know, just double it up, and it can hold heavy things. I don't see that. It's so weird that you have to have a leather expensive. Okay,
well, I really resent that you're making a moral judgment of me in a essential part of who I am.
The money that we spent on bags over the course of our marriage is ridiculous. It's absurd.
It's not absurd. I buy most of my bags after they've already been used by other people, so that I know.
And they're still expensive.
No, I'm sorry. $20 or $40 That's, is not expensive.
Yeah, for a bag.
No, for a bag. $20 for a bag is nothing.
It's amazing. You could buy anything else that would be useful and fun for $20. Anyway.
Okay, well, so clearly we can keep resentment. Our own... our own advice. So, how long have we talked?
We've talked for 1 hour and 10 minutes.
Oh my goodness. Well, this was our extra super special anniversary edition.
Yeah.
We'll do it again in another 18 years. Tell you what we've learned. Yeah. By then we won't be on the internet anymore because we've
both been banned for saying bad things on the internet.
For everything. So, but until next week at least, thank you for listening.